Listen up. The views and opinions of this radio show and podcast are prepared and provided by Philip D. Blackman in his personal capacity. The opinions expressed in this show are my own, and they do not reflect the view of this radio station, broadcasting platform, or any organization Philip D. Blackman is a member of. The material and information presented in this broadcast is for general information purposes only. Any and all media presented are the property of their respective owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. Let's get started.
We got for you tonight.
Man. It's time!
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, happy Friday. You know, I'd planned on taking the month off, right? Because, you know, I wanted to try to find my happy center and do everything that I can to, you know, just wanted to kind of take it easy this month. And then the news happened. So here we are for this very special Friday episode. You know, there's been a ton of reaction to this news about the women's NBA star Brittany Griner. She was released from Russian prison in a prisoner exchange with Victor Boot, right? Now, people are asking, why does an WNBA player and not a former Marine? So tonight, we're actually going to answer that question, and I'm going to present my perspective on the story that I think there's something really huge we're overlooking. But also later in the show, in the second half of this show tonight, Donald Trump, he sent out a social media post on Truth Social that has some people questioning if now Donald Trump is calling for the suspension of the Constitution to put him back in power. I'm also going to be trying to present you the case on this story as well. And lastly, if time permits, man, I want to discuss the arrogance of the United States government. The arrogance thinking that we have the right to influence another country's laws just because we're American. So tonight, it may seem like a very un-American episode, but I assure you, I still love my country. I just hate the direction we're going, but the direction that I do know we're going, I'm getting in trouble again on Facebook because I'm talking against the narrative. But hey, if you're interested in following the show, The Philip D. Blackman Show right there on Facebook. Also on YouTube, we're getting pretty good over on YouTube. They're kind of letting us do what we do at the YouTube.com/ The Philip D. Blackman Show, as well as over on LinkedIn at the same Philip D. Blackman Show. Now, if you're on Twitter or on Twitch, The PDB Show is going to be how you're going to find me. But guys, also, we're broadcasting live right now, AOW Radio, Pulse Talk, IPM Nation, About Face Radio. Guys, we are happy to have you with us. So if you want to leave a comment, you want to participate in the show, 409-245-9753, or you can use the chat that we have, again, from listeners across the airwaves. That's 409-245-9753. So to all my listeners across the nation, around the globe, thank you so much for tuning in to episode number 310. We're calling it Griner's Release and Reaction, and then part two will be Donald Trump and the U.S. Constitution. So, guys, before this is the holiday season, and one thing that we always need to remember is that there's a lot of families across the United States right now who are sitting down and planning, trying to plan how they're going to plan around the very first year of someone who's not with them. And then we expect that, you know, and, you know, service members, first responders, things like that. We expect that to be happening, but it doesn't necessarily make it any easier that it is happening. That's why we do the start of this show the way we do with every show, end of watch. And the whole purpose behind it is to honor all of our fallen men and women in the law enforcement community. And look, there's entirely too many of them to keep up with, especially when you're honoring one per week. We've had 207 officers die in the line of duty as of this show. Last year, we had 652. I mean, we may be one of these things we start to consider maybe doing a different officer every show. I don't know, but I do know we're doing everything we can to highlight these true heroes, these true patriots who are people who are doing a very thankless job. You know, when a police officer is killed, it's not just an agency that loses an officer. As an entire nation, we mourn. On the Philip D. Blackman Show, we mourn. Every time that Tammy writes these things up and does the recording, there's always a moment of mourning because these are people, and they have families, they have friends. And I think for me to, you know, we don't need to, it's very irresponsible for us to try to quantify one life over the other, and I never will do that. But one thing that because of the nature of their job, first responders, police officers more particularly, they're the ones that pulled our heartstrings. So friends, we're going to go ahead and continue covering this segment down. Just as another reminder, New York Police Department's Captain Janelle Sanders, she's one who just recently passed due to the events of 9/11.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Captain Janelle Sanders of the New York City Police Department in New York, who died on September 11, 2022, from cancer she developed following her assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center site after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Captain Sanders served her department faithfully for 22 years. The Captain's Endowment Association said in a statement, "We will never forget the brave men and women who lost their lives 21 years ago on this sad day. Today we lost active Captain Janelle Sanders due to 9/11 illness. May she rest in peace." Captain Sanders is survived by her two daughters. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Captain Sanders. New York City Captain Janelle Sanders, end of watch, September 11th, 2022. Rest in peace, ma'am.
Presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really Stinky Breath Breather Outer.
Mr. Really Stinky Breath Breather
Outer. Yeah, I know a few of them.
Though we'd never tell you to your face, you've got the breath that can stop a charging elephant.
Show us some mercy.
We want to hear what you have to say. We just want you to say it from way over there.
Keep on going.
Yeah, let's
go. What was
it
you had for lunch?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I'm seeing my commercials are doing what they're doing. So you don't get to, I don't know if you could hear it or not, but we had one playing. And so, and of course, you're sitting here watching me rock back and forth as I'm trying to get my thoughts wrapped around how am I going to frame the narrative of what's going on, you know? And I think the basic way we can frame it is to be honest with it first and foremost is because there was a lot of people who celebrated the release of NBA or women's NBA player Brittany Griner from imprisonment on Russia. Now, there's other people, though, that have been very quick to point out that there's still other Americans that have remained that are detained in the country right now. So, yeah, okay, yeah, so Brittany Griner, what about the rest of them? Immediately jump to the whataboutism instead of anybody going, well, hey, we got one. All right, right on. Now it's, you know, well, what about those? Now, one of those Americans that I've been seeing more and more, and this is kind of what drove the conversation, was this meme right here, this picture. One of the Americans that's been very popular right here is a man named Paul Whelan. He's a former United States Marine, not retired, former United States Marine. But there's more, but we'll get to that. He was arrested in Moscow December of 2018. So he's been in jail for 4 years. And now this report said that he was arrested when he was traveling to a wedding there in Russia. He was sentenced to 16 years in prison by the Russian court on espionage charges back in 2020. Now, he said that he and his family have maintained that the charges against him were absolutely baseless. Adam Kinzinger, you remember him. He was on the January 6th committee. He is a Republican out of Illinois. He was crying about the courage. But we're not going to do that. But he immediately, and I'm telling you this, I don't know if Adam Kinzinger falls into the line of what they call a rhino Republican name only, because he's almost more Democrat. He's almost like a Democratic Republican. But it's funny because he kind of fell right for it. He jumped right into the middle of it and really made himself, in my opinion, made himself look pretty stupid, right? So he jumped onto Twitter to ask why Whelan's release hasn't been negotiated after 4 years of detainment. And it didn't take long for a lot of people to take sides, I mean, and myself included. But I felt that the trade, it was a bad trade for several reasons, and none of them had to do with Paul Whelan. And I'll explain that here in just a moment. But Christy McCollum in the chat, she says, on the daily, Americans glorify athletes and give them more credit than those that protect and serve our communities and currently and country currently in the past. Why is this new development of a professional athlete being pardoned, exchanged, released, or whatever other terminology that's chosen such a spectacle? And I think because she fits a lot of criteria, Christy, you got to remember, not only is she a celebrity, but she is a female celebrity. She's a black female celebrity. She's a gay black female celebrity. She is a gay black female celebrity who's a social justice warrior who protests her country in peaceful, patriotic ways. So there's a lot of reasons on there, but I think the reason why this is such an issue is because it is the celebrity status. We didn't really hear a lot in April when a former military person was released, but this one right here is very, very politicized, and I think the reason why is because of who we did the trade for. And if you haven't been tracking who Victor Boot is, I mean, if you've been following the story, then you know that he's what they call the Merchant of Death. He even had a Hollywood movie that was based loosely on his exploits. It was called Lord of Wars, one of Nicolas Cage's movies. But here's why people are upset that Victor Boot was released first and foremost. Boot was a former Soviet Air Force officer. And he gained a lot of his fame and his notoriety by allegedly, supplying weapons for civil wars in South America, the Middle East, and Africa. Now, his clients were also said to include Liberia's Charles Taylor, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, both sides of the Anglo-Civil War. He was funding a lot of death by funding these wars by dropping weapons in. And when he got locked up, Russia, they pressed for Boot's release for years, and speculation grew about such a deal in the upper house of parliament that really they actually, believe it or not, when they was talking about Victor Boot, they were showing paintings that he made in prison, those that subject the subjects that remain from Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin down to a kitten. Now, the show of his art, it underlined Bout's complexities. Although it's a bloody business, you know, the 55-year-old, he was a vegetarian, they wanted you to know, and he loved classical music, and he was said to speak six languages. He's apparently a very educated person. But even former federal judge who sentenced him, Sherita Shindlin, I think her name is, in 2021, or 2011, the person who sentenced him for his crimes thought, right here in a quote that says 11 years behind bar was adequate punishment, she said that, quote, he's done enough time for what he did in the case. Now, and she made this assessment in July to the Associated Press, if you want to look it up. But what is the issue with Bout, or with Victor Boot, excuse me? Well, first, I guess Boot was convicted in 2011 on terrorism charges. Now, what makes this case interesting, and the reason why, and look, this is the known facts that we have present, you know. So if you want to argue with them, then you know, argue with the facts. You know, save it, you know, for someone like me, because here it is. Prosecutors said that he was ready to sell upwards of, say, $20 million in weapons, surface-to-air missiles that were specifically targeted, to shoot down U.S. helicopters. Now, when they made the claim at his 2012 sentencing, Boot shouted immediately, "That is a lie." He steadfastly proclaimed his innocence, and he described himself as a legitimate businessman who didn't sell weapons. Now, of course, right? Now, Boot's case, it fits well within Moscow's narrative that Washington, even currently now, they sought to trap and oppress the innocent Russians on flimsy grounds. Now, right here it is, it says, quote, from the resonant Boot case, a real hunt by Americans for Russian citizens around the globe has unfolded. And that's a government newspaper there that wrote last year in Russia. Now, increasingly about this, Russia has cited that his case is a human rights issue. Listen to the words of how the Soviet government is playing it, and then consider what we've been saying about all of our prisoners, right? The Russian government is saying Victor Boot is having civil rights issues in the great orators of civil rights defenders, the United States of America. You mean we're mistreating prisoners? Are you kidding? I mean, his wife and his lawyer claimed that Victor Boot's health had deteriorated in a harsh prison environment where foreigners, they're not always eligible for breaks that the Americans might receive. We got to create some type of divisiveness. But Boot hadn't been scheduled to be released until 2029, which means 7 years from now, he was supposed to get out. He is held just right there in a medium security facility in Marion, Illinois. And the judge even said, and I want to see if I can bring this back up here. The judge even said that he got a hard deal. And she noted that the sting operation that got him arrested, she said that, quote, the operatives put words in his mouth so that he'd say that he was aware Americans could die from weapons that he sold in order to acquire terrorism enhancement that would force a long prison sentence, not a life term. That is the judge who was listening, and she gave Boot the mandatory minimum sentence, which was 25 years. But she said that she only gave him that 25-year sentence because it was required by law. Now, at the time, his defense lawyers, they claimed that the United States targeted Victor Boot vindictively because it was embarrassed that his companies, they helped deliver goods to American military contractors that were involved in the war in Iraq because they didn't go through Uncle Sugar to get them themselves. Now, the deliveries, they occurred despite there was a United Nations sanction imposed against Boot since 2001 because of his reputation as a notorious illegal arms dealer. Now, the prosecutors had urged the judge to impose a life sentence, but obviously, like I said, the judge didn't even figure that 25 years. The judge even said, she said that was too much. And the government proceeded to represent the case that he's right to call himself nothing more than a businessman, that he's a businessman of the most dangerous order because the United States is here to pass judgment on the world's criminals, right? But he was later estimated to be worth about $6 billion in March of 2018 when he was arrested in Bangkok, Thailand. Now, again, he was arrested in Bangkok, Thailand, not the United States. So let's, you know, look, I'm going to go ahead and say it right here. I'm going to lead from the front, right? Victor Boot deserved to be locked in jail. He needed to be in prison, but my question is, why did he need to be in our prison? Because if you've read anything about it, about the case, you know, it, man, there is some things that make you kind of question what's going on. I mean, yeah, absolutely, he deserved to be locked up, but why us? Why did we have to be involved in this type of deal? You know, U.S. authorities, they tricked him into leaving Russia for what he thought was a meeting over a business deal to ship what prosecutors described as a breathtaking arsenal of weapons, including hundreds of surface-to-air missiles, machine guns, and sniper rifles, 10 million rounds of ammo, 5 tons of plastic explosive. Now, he was taken into custody in Bangkok's luxury hotel after conversations with the DEA, who's doing counterterrorism stings. The DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, is doing counterterrorism operations. Isn't that usually like an FBI or CIA or maybe even ATF, considering the type of munitions we're talking, right? I mean, but no, it was the DEA. The DEA, they pose as informants, or as officials of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, also known as the FARC. Now, the group, they've been classified by Washington as a narco-terrorist group, which is why I'm assuming they use the DEA. But Victor Boot was then brought to the United States in November of 2010. So this whole Merchant of Death moniker, that is something that was attached to Boot by high-ranking minister of Britain's Foreign Affairs. And the nickname was also included, a nickname that was given by someone else was included on the U.S. government's indictment of Boot. But here's the problem. There's not a single crime that Victor Boot did that was against the United States. I know that doesn't really have anything to the grand scheme. And Tammy and I was talking about it earlier. And, you know, I'm just to Tammy's point, you know, why Victor Boot was locked up is regardless. The fact is, why were we dealing with him? Why was he in our care? And why are we trading someone who is responsible for the death of so many people for a self-admitted criminal, right? I mean, Brittany Griner. You know, in the rare case that you don't know her story, Mrs. Griner, she was on February 17th of this year, she was arrested on smuggling charges in Russia. Now, what she had, what the Russians called smuggling, she had a vaporizer cartridge containing, they say it was containing less than a gram of hash oil. Now, in Arizona, apparently she'd been prescribed this medical cannabis, which, by the way, one of the very important things is if you ever go to a different country, it might be behooving for you to look at, well, hey, you know, what's acceptable here isn't acceptable there, right? I mean, you would think that you would do that type of research. Cannabis is illegal in Russia. Somehow that has gotten lost on a lot of people. In May of 2022, the State Department stated that they had determined that Miss Griner here was being wrongfully detained. And by them giving that classification indicated there was going to be a more aggressive approach towards securing her release because she was wrongfully detained. Again, the arrogance of the United States government, the arrogance of politicians, the arrogance of American citizens to think that we have the right to determine the proper sentencing or the laws that need to be enforced based off the sole criteria, well, they're an American citizen. How arrogant are we? How deluded have we become? I mean, would you seriously, any of you out there who believe that America, because they're American citizens, they're wrongfully detained, even though she admitted to breaking the law, she's wrongfully detained. Help me understand this, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm really trying to figure out, would you allow anyone to walk in your, and I asked this to Tammy, would you, any of you guys be willing to let me walk into your house and be like, hey, Laura or Christy, whoever, right? Hey, so where your glasses are and where your spice rack is, you need to swap those because it makes more sense to me. And then I start and I proceed to do it. Are you going to sit there and let that happen? Are you going to let me come into your house and make those rules for you? Absolutely not. You throw me out on my ass if you had a single hair on your ass. You throw me right out. You would ask me to leave. But yet our government is saying to another country, which is hysterical, by the way, that one of our American citizens is wrongfully detained. Why? Is it because we don't detain up? Is it because we don't lock up the people in our country for violent assaults and crime anymore? Is that why it's wrongfully detained? Because we don't want to detain our people that way? Who knows? I mean, but does it really sound familiar to what happened to Victor Boot, right? The Russian government said that Victor Boot was wrongfully detained. The United States government is saying that Brittany Griner was wrongfully detained. On August 4, the court found Griner guilty, sentenced her to 9 years in prison. And they additionally fined her 1 million rubles, which comes out to about $16,301. Christy McCollum says in the chat, she says, "Thank you for giving me the facts and educating me on this case. I have not followed the entirety of it. I've just seen all this hoopla with Griner being an athlete. Your research and time are appreciated. That is what I'm trying to do, Chrissy, is I want people to understand what the argument is and why we want to argue." Of course, be outraged, like Tammy said. She was telling me today, she said, you know, it's okay if you want to be mad, but make sure you're mad at the right stuff. Laura Harlow says, if they broke the damn law, they should be detained. All right, so there's Brittany Griner, Victor Boot. So in the trifecta of the names, the last name has been discussed. In all this hoopla has been a name named Paul Whelan. Now, Paul Whelan, you've probably seen it a lot on social media. He was a Marine. They've said he's a retired Marine. He's a serving Marine. He's a veteran Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine, that type of thing. He was a Marine who was left behind and has fueled this outrage over this whole situation with Brittany Griner and Victor Boot getting swapped, right? Now, honestly, I personally argue that Paul Whelan is more of a talking point than a real contention that anyone, besides his family, I'll say family, you know, I think he's more used as a talking point for anyone to really want him returned to the U.S. And here's why. Because December the 28th, 2018, in the last administration, Paul Whelan was arrested in the Moscow area by the Russian Federal Security Services, right? And they even confirmed his arrest. Now, Whelan's twin brother, David, he gave out a very remarkable statement in Brittany Griner's release. You know, if you want to know what it is, go find it. It was, you know, really heartfelt. But he said that Whelan, that Paul had actually arrived in Moscow December 22 to attend a wedding of a former Marine at the Hotel Metropole Moscow to assist. And also, he said he was there to assist the groom's family members on their first visit to Russia. And this is a country, apparently, that he's visited many times, according to his brother. Now, according to the Russian news, Whelan was apprehended in his hotel room at the Metropole while he was wrapping up a long outing with a Russian citizen who, they say, handed him a USB drive that contained, quote, a list of all employees at a classified security agency. Now, the BBC, a separate news entity, a separate of Russia, they usually try to, by all accounts, it seems like the BBC calls it right down the way it's supposed to be. They cited family members of Whelan who said that Whelan previously bragged about knowing an agent of the FSB and that he was privy to an unusual cache of personal details about his friend, including which intelligence training school they attended. Now, why that's a big deal is because biographical information like that is typically reserved for a very close circle. And for this guy to go out there and say, oh, yeah, I know it, right? But as Whelan said about the arrest, he said that his longtime friend had appeared suddenly at the hotel, and then he was followed by authorities who later arrested him. Now, according to the lawyers, this is where it gets funny. They couldn't provide the name of the Russian longtime friend because of Russian secrecy rules. I mean, we do it here in the United States, so, you know, who's to grumble about this? But Whelan's family has identified the person as Igela Yatsenko, who the Russian newspaper described as a major, having the rank of major in the FSB's Department K, which means it was an internal sting. Very similar to what happened to Victor Boot, also happened to Paul Whelan. Now, Whelan's lawyer said that he had been unaware of the contents of the USB stick, and he believed that it contained material solely for the personal value of photographs, videos, anything at all about his previous vacation in Russia. Now, here's the problem with this, ladies and gentlemen, because when his own family members, when his own friends are corroborating that this guy's saying that he knows higher-ups, I mean, hey, and then this happens, it brings in, look, let's be honest, we talk about reasonable doubt. Beyond a reasonable doubt, he has to be found suspicious, well, or he has to be found guilty. Well, this right here definitely gives a reasonable doubt that there's a possibility. June 15 of 2020, Whelan was convicted and he was sentenced to 16 years in a Russian prison for espionage by the court in Moscow. His lawyers later said that they believed that Russia would now seek a prisoner swap with Victor Boot even back then. But he also said in court, again, the arrogance of the United States. Whelan said in court that it was a sham to use him to influence the United States. He says, quote, "We have proven my innocence. We have proven fabrications. This is slimy, greasy, corrupt Russian politics. Nothing more, nothing less." As interesting as a narrative surrounding Paul Whelan's arrest, though, from the Russian Federation, a similar argument I'm saying can be made about Victor Boot's arrest with the interesting narrative from the United States. Pure politics here, ladies and gentlemen. Both sides are playing their cards well enough to garner the support from their respective sides. But imagine that. Both sides are claiming that the other side's lying. Man, this is kind of feeling repetitive. Tammy says in the chat, she says, a lot of people don't even know about Whelan, but they're stomping their feet about him now. Where were they before this trade? Questions, I tell you. And that's kind of the point, right? Because I think John Bolton come out today and said that during the Trump administration, they turned down a trade to get Paul Whelan back because it was the right thing for America. Who knows what to believe with our government anymore because they're all full of shit. And Laura Harlow says that I still think that they should have swapped him, but this whole thing is just awful. Or maybe they shouldn't have swapped at all. Well, there's more to it that I wanted to give, right? So that is what he was found guilty of on that side. But as far as the conversation regarding that Paul Whelan is a Marine, he has that Marine status. Some of you have probably seen this meme that's been going around. And for those of you listening on the radio, there's a picture of Brittany Griner on the left. There's a picture of Paul Whelan in his private Air Force or Marine uniform. Benny Johnson on Twitter posted this, and he says, quote, "Meet Brittany Griner and Marine Paul Whelan. Both Americans. Both were convicted in Russian courts on dubious charges. Both serving multi-year sentences in Russian prison. Brittany hates America. Paul served America. Guess which one Biden traded terrorist to free." Now, look, ladies and gentlemen. I want to, let me see if I can pull this back up. All right, so first off, dubious charges, hard to make that argument that Brittany Griner was arrested on dubious charges, especially when she admitted to doing what she did. So let's be honest about that. But this right here bothers me to no end because I actually see a lot of people, you know, I actually had someone yell at me yesterday about, what about talking about leaving a man behind? And you look, usually people who say that shit to veterans like me who disagree, you know, what about leaving no man behind? Usually people that say garbage like that, they've never really been entrusted with the responsibility of actually making sure that everybody returns home. But I digress. Paul Whelan, yes, he enlisted in the Marine Corps Reserve in 1994. He took military leave from a security firm that he worked for to serve as a Marine Corps Reserve from 2003 to 2008. He had service in Iraq. He held the rank of staff. Hang on. He held the rank of staff sergeant, which is an E6. Now, what he did, he was in the Marine Air Control Group 38, and he worked as administrative clerk and administrative chief. He was a part of Operation Iraqi Freedom. All right, so we've met all of that. And, oh, man, Tammy, I like this. Tammy says they left plenty behind in Iraq or in Afghanistan. I didn't think about that, but that's a great point. But, all right, let me get back to this. So, after Paul Whelan's court-martial conviction, let me put his picture back up here because make sure we know who we're talking about, this decorated Marine, this retired Marine that everybody says, right? He had a court-martial conviction January 2008 on multiple counts related to larceny. Paul Whelan was sentenced to 60 days restriction, reduction to pay grade to E4. He got a dishonorable discharge. The specific charges that were levied against Paul Whelan are attempted larceny, 3 specifications of dereliction of duty, making a false official statement, wrongfully using another service member's social security number, 10 specifications of making and uttering checks without having sufficient funds in his account for payment. He was a chronic hot check writer. Now look, here's my point. Paul Whelan's veteran status, besides being dishonorable, it does not elevate him above anyone else because of what he did. And it amazes me that somehow people feel that our veteran status it elevates you, above the normies, right, who didn't volunteer to serve their countries. But consider this. Timothy McVeigh, Jeffrey Dahmer, Anthony Sowell, Charles Whitman. You know what? Did those names sound familiar? They were all veterans, but you probably didn't know that because you knew they were serial killers. So the question that I've been posting for the past 24 hours is, does military service, regardless of honor, does it elevate or does it make one person's life more valuable than the other? Or does the service member, you know, or does the service that they once had, does it make them good people for life and gives them a virtual pass on being an asshole for the rest of their lives? I'm going to say I don't think so. But there's another name that's been missed, you know, in this conversation. I've been seeing it a little bit today. And this guy is the former U.S. ambassador to Russia. His name is Mark Fogel. Now, Mark Fogel, he worked as a history teacher for years in the Anglo-American school right there in Moscow, where his students included children of U.S. diplomats. Now, he was arrested. Mark Fogel was arrested August of 2021 at a Moscow airport after entering the country with roughly 17 grams of cannabis that his family and lawyers say are prescribed by a doctor in the U.S. to treat chronic pain. Again, if this guy spent years, if he spent years in Russia as a teacher, he should have known that cannabis products are illegal. And just because a doctor writes it for you in the United States doesn't mean another country has the honor. That's just not how the world works. Because you're an American, they're not going to change the rules. But his case, well, why I'm bringing up Mark Fogel is, man, it is, he was, it held a very interesting parallel to what Garner did, right? I mean, almost exactly. You know, Fogel was convicted what they considered large-scale drug smuggling in June, and he was sentenced at the same exact court that Brittany Griner was sent to. But the major difference for Fogel is that unlike Griner and Whelan, you know, this man right here has not been designated by the State Department as wrongfully detained. Why? Why is that? I mean, the guy did exactly what Brittany Griner did, and he was not given the status of being wrongfully detained, but the United States government did the exact same thing, or they did just the polar opposite for Brittany Griner, and the question is why? Why would you do that? I mean, rather than Americans being wrongfully detained in any foreign countries determined by the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State is the one who assesses the case with certain criteria that's outlined in Robert Levinson's Hostage Recovery and Hostage Case Taking Accountability Act. But it's the State Department's information page on wrongful detentions that really also notes that, quote, every assessment will be different based on specific factors. Well, what is the specific factors the State Department has looked at for Mark Fogel versus Brittany Griner when they did the same exact thing? Is it because the difference, but is the sex the difference? Is it the sex and sexual orientation? Is that the difference? Is it because maybe Mark doesn't belong to the LGBTQIA community? Is it because he's a white male? What is it? What is the difference? Why have they not done this? And look, I'm not advocating for Mark Fogel to be released either, because Mark Fogel did what he said he... Mark Fogel is guilty of what he's accused of, just like Brittany Griner was. But with this designation of being wrongfully detained in place, the efforts that the United States government can take, having the consular staff, they would monitor his condition, they'd engage the country that's detaining him and exerting pressure via the media, sanctions, and the like. But there's a group of bipartisan senators out there who sent a letter to Anthony Blinken back in August calling for him to designate Fogel as wrongfully detained as well, but the government doesn't appear to do so, nor do they have any intentions of doing so. So the issue that I'm having here, again, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Fogel did what he said he was, he was charged, he admitted to what he did. He has admitted to what he is charged to. Brittany Griner, same thing. Now, Paul Whelan, he's maintaining his innocence, just like Victor Boot, but we got to argue, which is worse, which is better. Honestly, I think all this is completely ridiculous, because since when as Americans have we decided, when do we get to decide that another country's laws should be handled this way? When did we get to say that, hey, the way that we do our laws in this, the way we do our laws in our country, all of you have to recognize that, you have to understand that, you have to respect that? Would you respect a family member if you had friends that had a little kid running around who just habitually run around and threw shit off the shelves and they just expressing themselves? That's what is welcome at their house. Would you allow that to happen in your house? Hell no, you wouldn't let somebody come in and disrespect your house. So why in the world, as Americans, are we expecting Russia or any other country to yield to what we want, to bend to our will? I don't understand this. You know, Laura Harlow says in the chat they left plenty behind in Afghanistan. They think we forgot about that. We didn't. Tammy says that we left behind some in Benghazi, too. Amen to that. But again, Tammy, what difference does it make? I'm not saying that. That's Hillary Clinton's quote. But Grissom McCollum says, because the media can't push their bias and divisiveness with Mr. Fogle. Absolutely. But here's another question that I was thinking. How do we think, as Americans, that we deserve some kind of special attention because we belong to the United States of America? How, because we're seeing that, right? You know, if you remember, was it back in the 90s, there was, I can't remember the guy's name. He took a cane pole across the ass cheek. Three lashes was his penalty because he was guilty in Singapore of graffiti. And Americans were beside themselves. Oh, he's an American citizen. They can't do that. It's cruel and unusual. Maybe by your standards. But remember, ladies and gentlemen, let's play the game that we have to really pay attention to, because say in the Middle East community, in the Middle East countries, you know, pedophilia is a welcome practice over there. As a matter of fact, girls, females, they're the ones who are for procreation, and boys and men are for practice and fun. Can you imagine the outrage that would happen if we arrested someone from, say, Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria who have those laws, that is their laws in place? They get busted for pedophilia here in the United States, and that state over there, that other country, could you imagine the outrage that would happen if Palestine or Syria or Iraq or Afghanistan or if any of those people said, oh, the United States, no, they are wrongfully detained because it's legal where we do it. No, that wouldn't happen. We wouldn't accept that as an argument, and I can't believe that we're trying to make that an argument for us. Laura Harlow says, nope, they broke the damn law. She says, now, how arrogant so many believe that they can go somewhere and act a fool. Tammy has hit that. That's been her argument from day one. If she's guilty of the crime, then she needs to do the time, regardless of who it is. And it's not personal on Brittany Griner. I mean, we're forgetting, you know, these people, they have committed crimes in other countries. Nowhere does anyone dictate what is an acceptable criminal justice system for another country. But here's the point of contention that I hope to set some of you off with, right? If we're seriously going to sit here and we're going to attack Russia for their drug laws about being too strict or too unfair, this might be a good time for us to look in the mirror as a country. I mean, for example, under New York state law, the penalty for possessing 16 ounces of marijuana, it's equivalent to that of illegally selling a firearm, or for possession of an explosive bomb, or even a machine gun. A minimum jail sentence of 1 to 3 years, a maximum of 7. The penalty for selling 16 ounces of marijuana, that is equivalent to that for illegally selling 10 firearms, 3 firearms, to 15 years in jail. I mean, the absurd message is, I suppose, is that pot is probably more harmful than guns, and we all know how dangerous guns are, right? And I'm being very facetious when I say that, but look, we have zero moral high ground as a country to argue that drug laws for another country is unjust, especially considering how many people we still have in prison right now, first-time offenders, just possession. They've received ridiculous amounts of prison terms. And yet we're going to say what happened to Brittany Griner over there, we're going to lose our mind because over there, because we're used to here in the United States when celebrities screw up, when they get in trouble, when they do the wrong thing, we're used to them getting away with it. That's why people were so unbelievably stunned when Brittany Griner was found guilty, because wait a minute, she's a celebrity. That can't happen. And then people, well, what about the Marine, Mark Fogle, or Paul Whelan? What about him? I mean, he was a dirtbag as a human being. He was a dirtbag as a service member. He has a long and charted history of being a dirtbag, of lying, of having integrity issues. So I guess, we hear this all the time when we're talking a police shooting here, that when the media shows the victim of police shooting, they go, well, hey, this guy, he's got a criminal history, you know. I mean, he's a bad dude. And the argument we hear is, well, hey, their criminal record does not make them a bad person. Absolutely, and you're right, it doesn't. However, the criminal record does contribute to a pattern of behavior that really should be examined. Paul Whelan, the fact that he's a veteran means nothing to this whole conversation. Mark Fogle did the same thing that Brittany Griner did, nothing. Why didn't, you know, if Paul Whelan was too much because they're looking at using him for another Russian trade because they've got one on the block, what about Mark Fogle? Why hasn't the government, you know, done the same thing, the same crime that Brittany Griner's guilty of, Mark Fogle's guilty of, but two different treatments, and I just don't understand why. No, I do understand why, and I think you do too, but we're going to save ourselves from that, guys. Stick around. I want to take a commercial break, and we're going to come back with our next segment where we're going to be talking about Donald Trump and his response to the Constitution and what happened with the election. Guys, stick around. Give me 61 seconds, and we'll be back with you on the other side.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me the doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
Your style.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, Really Bad Dancer.
This is Donald J. Trump. When I'm not talking about stolen elections or how great I am listening to the Philip D. Blackman Show, Making America Smarter, one show at a time. Enjoy the program.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Happy Friday. Let's see, it's the 9th of December. Jesus, Christmas is around the corner. Episode number 310, we just got through talking about Brittany Griner, her release, and of course the reaction, why I think it's all completely, it's elevated for the wrong reasons. And now we're going to jump into this next segment, man, Donald Trump and the Constitution. So here's my argument. Right from Jump Street, Donald Trump's Achilles heel, it has to truly be his own narcissistic self-assurance. And hang on just a second, I see this coming in right now, hang on. So, my wife is, she's harassing me already on social media. Tammy says, talking about that video that I just showed with Donald Trump doing his weird dance. She writes in here, she says, quote, "I bet that dance would go with put a ring on it. I bet. Tammy, I think it might be time to create something unique and different like that. Let's try that for the next show." Man, I love having a sidekick, right? All right, so look, Donald Trump, he's narcissistic as hell. His self-assurance, and it translating into Donald Trump always being right when he decides that he is. And that's always. The 2020 election, it had a lot wrong with it. We know it did, and we know it does. But from the media, big tech interference, bulk mail-in voting or balloting, this election, it was not a fair election, even by the most of the problems that were arguably legal. This election was not a fair election. Now, there's no way that, and we'll, as we progress through the show, I'll paint my picture why I'm saying this. I'm not saying that Donald Trump, you know, lost because of cheating. No, there's no evidence for that. But I'm going to say this was not a fair election, even if most of the problems were arguably legal, right? Trump, however, he has cemented in his own mind and in the minds of most of his faithful followers that there's no possible way that he could have lost the election. To this day, right now, December the 9th, 2022, Donald Trump has doubled down, he's tripled down, he's quadrupled down, what the hell was I trying to say, on his claim that the election was rigged, that it was stolen from him, though he and his legal team, they tend to focus on the counting of votes, really, instead of the aforementioned real problems of the vote, right? Any Republican or conservative who dares to question Trump's claim, you're immediately smeared as a rhino, and you're part of the problem. That's why I don't identify with the Republican Party. Not for a while. Why? because I'm not a rhino. I'm an independent thinker. I can look at both sides and see the value in both sides. Laura Harlow says, did you hear the way Ann Coulter tore into Trump on Thursday? I don't think Clay and Buck could get her off fast enough when she started to spew. No, but now I will go back and watch, listen to Clay and Buck's show, their show in the around noon. I'll go check that out, Laura. Thank you so much. But, you know, Donald Trump's MO, it's long been to never admit defeat. You don't have to follow much of Donald Trump to know that's his deal. Now, while this may be a very calculated tactic to show that you have toughness in making business deals, it's not really a good characteristic for what we call a good leader. Yeah, there's a long line of leaders throughout our history who shared the my way or highway ethic, but most of them were tyrants. They always placed their own interest ahead of the rights and the needs of the people they served. The United States of America, it's not a democracy, it is a republic. Our system of government, it rests on the populace electing representative whose power is both delineated and it's limited by the U.S. Constitution. Superseding all elected officials' authority is the Constitution. It's the standard of governance for the people. So when individuals start seeking power to call for all or parts of the Constitution to be ignored, to be changed, to be terminated, it should immediately raise red flags. Now, over the weekend, just in time for that critical Georgia Senate runoff that Donald Trump has impeccable timing, he issued his latest 2020 election fraud rant, and he posted on a social media site, Truth Social, this message. He writes, quote, "So the revelation of massive and widespread fraud and deception in working closely with big tech companies, the DNC, and the Democratic Party, do you throw the presidential election results of 2020 out and declare the rightful winner? Or do you have a new election? These are questions." He then added that a massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. He wraps up by saying that our great founders did not want and would not condone false and fraudulent elections. All right, so let's try to unpack this, right? So Donald Trump was responding to Elon Musk's release of the Twitter files, right? Which personally was very underwhelming. You know, for me, it was very underwhelming. And yeah, it proved, you know, I was like, yeah, okay, water's wet. What did we learn? Nothing. But these Twitter files, they exposed the internal workings of Twitter at the time to show that the company colluded with Democrats and federal law enforcement to censor damaging stories against the Democratic Party, primarily the one about Hunter Biden's laptop revealing that Joe's corruption ahead of the 2020 election. Twitter's collusion with Democrats, it's a scandal that's being unpacked, even still. Big tech, they clearly interfered in the 2020 election on behalf of Joe Biden and the Democrats. That is not debatable. And this, it's speculable that the interference could have swung the election in Biden's favor, because there's been reports, there's been polling indicating that there's been a significant number of Biden voters who would not have voted for him if they had known that Hunter Biden's laptop story wasn't fake news, but genuine. But election interference and election fraud, they're not synonymous. Russia interfered in the 2016 election, but that doesn't mean that Trump's election victory was fraudulent or illegitimate. Trump won legitimately in 2016, no matter how much Washington established, the left media and Democrats angrily denied it as they fermented their baseless Russia collusion conspiracy theory. Donald Trump was declared the rightful winner. Regardless, we heard for 4 years that he was an illegitimate president. Hillary Clinton, she absolutely didn't want to secede the election, but she did. Donald Trump still has yet to. But Laura Harlow says in the chat, she says he needs to move on from this. We knew they were lying. They have been exposed. Tammy says Trump is like a crazy that can't accept that a breakup happened. Jeez. Laura says, 2 years under the bridge, move on. That is the vibe that I'm getting. I will always appreciate what he was able to accomplish in office. And absolutely, we're not taking away what he did in office. We're talking about what he's doing right now. I mean, it's understandable that Donald Trump, after seeing Twitter's latest revelation, that he would see this as him being vindicated, his loudly expressed claims of the 2020 election being rigged and stolen. I mean, Ben Shapiro, probably one of his biggest fans, he said that, quote, "You can see why the president's pissed, and he should be." But his response, is jumping on the rake with both feet. Instead of the story right now being about Twitter's malfeasance, how the left media can more easily ignore that and focus on the Trump's would-be authoritarianism. Besides feeling like they don't make facts, and try as he might, you know, Donald Trump wasn't able to provide any necessary facts to prove that there was voter fraud allegations in court. That is just being honest. That's primarily because he was barking up the wrong tree. That's my argument. He was playing that classic political game, conflation. Well, I did this. Well, what about that? Same thing that we're doing now in everything that we do in our life. You know, Musk revealed that interference that took place, not fraud. Nothing that Elon Musk revealed will show that voter fraud occurred in 2020. None of the Twitter files have illegally cast, show any, but none of the Twitter files show a single illegally cast ballot. It doesn't show voter suppression. It doesn't show rigged voting machines. And it doesn't intentionally show uncounted ballots. Trump's made all these claims in support of his stolen election assertions, though he fails to deliver on the legitimate legal evidence to provide any of them, or to prove any of them to a single court of law, at least on a scale significant enough to change the results even in one state or one district. But of course, to Trump, if he believes it, then that's all the evidence he needs. The way forward, however, is not to endlessly litigate the past and if it could be changed, but to push election integrity and better voter information so future contests are trustworthy. Yet here we are once again. We're contending with the apocalyptic headlines about Donald Trump and the Constitution. Did Donald really call for the termination of the Constitution? Did Donald Trump really call for the termination of the Constitution? The short answer is no. Donald Trump's always been rather imprecise with his language, but I think it's on purpose, and as some have very keenly observed, they say that for Donald Trump, you need to listen to what he means, not what he says. Well, in this world, ladies and gentlemen, facts and words matter. I mean, it's easy to see how some have concluded that he was attacking the Constitution. Quote, fake news is actually trying to convince the American people that I said I wanted to terminate the Constitution. This is more disinformation and lies, Donald Trump says, because he didn't do it. It wasn't me. But in reality, Donald Trump was attempting to argue that the 2020 election's massive fraud, he says that it was so egregious that it served to not only undercut all the rules regulating America's electoral system, but it effectively allowed for terminating those election stipulations within the Constitution. Really, the only remedy that Trump sees is right now is to throw out the declared 2020 election winner, Biden, and have himself recognized as the winner, or maybe even hold a new election. But the trouble that Donald Trump runs into here is that nothing within the Constitution would support his desired action. The Founding Fathers, they're clearly not foolish men. They designed a government around the very insightful conclusion that given the opportunity, men are more naturally bent toward doing evil than doing good. You know, they designed a system to limit the evil's powers while also keeping open the opportunity for powerful good. Here's where Trump's assertion that the founders would not condone a false and fraudulent election, where it falls apart. Of course, the Founding Fathers would not condone election fraud, but they also recognize that due to the nature of mankind, the complete elimination of all fraud, it is a pipe dream. That's why the justice system the founders established in order to tackle instances where fraud arises. The founders' answer to Trump's fraud complaint would be consistently as it has always been. Take your case and your evidence to the courts. Trump did, with at least some of his claims, and he failed to prove his fraud allegations. He then pivoted, and he sought to prove his fraudulent claims in the court of public opinion, where he has failed to really convince anything approaching a majority of the American public. Indeed, as more investigations have been done, there's been no smoking gun of a massive fraud in the sense of illegal voting or vote counting, but it's been demonstrably proven. Allegations are not proof. Those who originally gave it at least some sympathetic credence, they've become tired of the mostly horrific claims. It's time to move on, as some of you have been saying. They can't. They can't move on. Neither side, because Donald Trump can't move on. Isn't that something? Laura Harlow says in the chat, she says, it makes me sad that is the way it is. bring on a great candidate, please. I agree. Tammy Blackman says he definitely chose his words poorly. Understatement of the year right there, woman. Laura says the moment Pence certified the election, it was over because that was his job. He did his job, and he got attacked for it. Laura says he did, and there he goes with his crazy tweets again. Amen, right? So look, I'm a fan of Brett Hume. He's a veteran journalist, and he put it. He said that it's one more example of the burden that Donald Trump imposes on the party he's associated with, means Donald Trump comes with baggage. Again, that's Donald Trump's Achilles heel. He cannot admit defeat ever. He's made this whole stolen election one of his main features of his 24 campaign, which is why he decided to weigh in on the Twitter files revelation. No one, I'm going to argue, is happier about his tirade than the leftists who can make hay out of it. Christy McCollum in the chat, she says, I know this is a little off of what's being discussed, but I have to, she says, but I have to pose the question. Why do Biden, others who are truly running the country currently, for their wrongdoings while Trump was attacked on the daily of his presidency? Why do Biden, others who are currently running the country for their wrongdoings while Trump's... she says, I myself do not claim either party, invite the blessed of two evils. Okay, so I think he got auto-corrected, maybe. She says, pose the question, why does Biden and the others kind of, I'm assuming you're saying they get a pass for their wrongdoings while Trump is attacked on the daily? Because it's identity politics 101. It always has been. Because there's not a bigger threat to democracy than Donald Trump and his MAGA Republicans, according to everyone, apparently. But following the Twitter release, right, of last Friday, these revelations about the collusion between the deep state and the big tech to censor news about Biden's laptop from hell, right? Donald Trump jumped on Truth Social. And what followed, you know, could have been another Charlottesville moment among the media because, I mean, if you remember, the big narrative is that he said in Charlottesville there were good people on both sides, right? That is their rally cry, although that has been proven false over and over again. CNN in their headline said that, quote, Trump calls for the termination of the Constitution and Truth Social Post. Over at Axios, their headline said, after a few hours ago, the leader of the Republican Party, Donald Trump, called for destroying the Constitution and making himself a dictator. That come from Democrat New Jersey Bill Pascrell, right? But those who believe that Donald Trump is evil and ignorant will, of course, read what they want to in his post, regardless of his intent and his actual meaning. Had Donald Trump actually called to terminate the Constitution, as a lot of anti-Trumpers would lead the gullible to believe, he would have lost his constitutional conservative base. He knows that. I don't think that people are going to trade the Constitution for Donald Trump. I just don't believe that because too many people that vote for Donald Trump hold tighter to that Constitution American flag than do any political party. But I'm going to present you two different views, and from the best I can tell, that's been generated from Trump's post. All right, so the predisposed anti-Trump crowd, they chose to read Allow For, as for advocating to the termination of laws governing elections. Those governing laws include Article 2, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution, which provides for the unique role of state legislators, not state bureaucrats, but state legislators, to set presidential election laws. Now, indeed, the constitutional arguments presented before January 6th of 21, which unfortunately been largely misreported by the corporate press, they've overshadowed by other issues. They're grounded in the efforts to prevent false and fraudulent elections. Nothing is argued. The Federalist paper of 68 says that nothing was more to be desired than a very practical obstacle that would be opposed to cabal, intrigue, and corruption. These most deadly adversaries of the Republican government might naturally have been expected to make their approaches from more than a quarter, but chiefly from the desire in foreign powers to gain important or improper accident in our councils. Now, that key states that Article 2, Section 1, by bypassing state legislators, is making new rules for the election, and it did result in election law violations, which swayed the outcome. That is part of the argument. But another common reading of the Allow For that Donald Trump was saying was to make something possible, as in you leave your house unlocked for theft, allows for theft, right? It means to give the necessary time or the opportunity for something to happen. Reading Donald Trump's comment in that context, I feel like it brings a very different meaning to his social media post from a call by him to terminate the Constitution. This reading here, It's more plausible when someone knows that Donald Trump was briefed by a lot of brilliant constitutional lawyers about the state fraud and the constitutional issues under Article 2, Section 1. Now, whether one agrees with the constitutional arguments or not, that's a different story. It was the acts of others that terminated the laws of the governing the 2020 election, like what was seen in the Twitter revelations about the collusion with big tech and the abaters such as those who lied and said the laptop was Russian disinformation. It's that collusion that he's making the argument that allowed for a false and fraudulent election. The lies, they skewed votes. Polls reveal that. And Madison didn't envision that we now face with collusion between a deep state and a mega corporation. Federalist 53 refers to the Constitution as a paramount to the government. John Marshall called it our fundamental paramount law. Had Trump actually called for the Constitution to be broken when the Biden administration, the Democrats in Congress break it every single day, he would have sealed his fate for 2024, and I think he still might, depending on who wins the argument. We got to realize that there's really no specific process that's laid out in the Constitution to describe how we handle a fraudulent election. If massive fraud is found, Trump is saying that such a finding allows for the rules and the guiding elections to be set aside and a redress of fraud is to be made. That's what he's saying. But where is his proof for that? As anti-Trumpers are more than happy to use this new Charlottesville hoax moment to distract from Elon Musk's release of the Twitter censorship files, I want you to pay attention and notice how the media, they're no longer covering what Musk released as much as they are with Trump's reaction. Again, he's shooting his own self in the foot. Laura Hurlow says, no, we're not, and I didn't take it that way. I didn't take it that he meant it that way, but he doesn't need to be throwing temper tantrums now. It is over. Absolutely. So Donald Trump, he continues to do more harm than good. And I want you to consider this, because I want to take you on a trip down memory lane. It'd be about 60 seconds long. Do you remember during the whole Russia investigation, Adam Schiff, right? He took to the airwaves over the three-year investigation, and he touted, we have evidence in plain sight.
Pain. But look, I've been very clear over the last year and a half, that there is ample evidence of collusion in plain sight.
But look, you can see evidence in plain sight on the issue of collusion, pretty compelling evidence.
Have you seen, do you have direct evidence of collusion with Russia?
Well, I think there is direct evidence. I think it's corrupt and evidence of collusion.
What's your evidence? You've been saying that on TV for years.
Well, I will tell you, and I've also been saying, as you know, that the evidence is in plain sight, not hidden anywhere. But as I've said along, there's plenty of evidence of collusion and corrupt commingling. On the issue of collusion, the reality is that there is ample evidence of collusion in plain sight, and it has been for a very long time. And of course, as the weeks have gone on, that evidence has continued to mount.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
That was Adam Schiff's line, and Laura... Tammy, she wants to vomit every time she sees him on the news as well, because, you know, that little 6-inch neck. But hey, look here. We have evidence in plain sight. That was his line, and he repeated it more than he repeated anything else in his life. I'm assuming to his wife's name, his child's name, or anything else. And people like me, we called for evidence if it existed. Now, although I suspect Adam Schiff is full of shit, he's full of Schiff. You know, I would have been willing to examine any evidence he had, because when somebody makes a substantial accusation and then they state they have irrefutable evidence in plain sight, which to this day, no one has seen that said evidence. But when someone says they have a grievance of wrongdoing and proof to support it, they should be forced to show it, especially when they're a policymaker. But that evidence, it never came. And I made the argument then that if he can't produce evidence that he's claiming he possesses, he needs to be removed from Congress because he's blatantly lying to the American people. Remember, it's not what you know, it's what you can prove. Robert Mueller couldn't prove that Donald Trump colluded with Russia, so where's the evidence that Adam Schiff said he had? So here we are back in 2022. We have a former president of the United States and a host of other politicians and media chuckleheads who are still laying claim the 2020 election was stolen. Donald Trump and his supporters are still contending that Trump lost due to election fraud and rigged elections. Remember, Hillary Clinton and the Dems, they claimed the same exact thing the whole time Trump was in office because Russian interference, but my point is made. New election, new loser, but the same thing is happening. Trump, who's more like Stacey Abrams than I think he ever will care to admit, he still has yet to concede the election, and he's still claiming that it was stolen from him. So I'll ask the question again, although like I was with Adam Schiff when thinking he was full of shit, but willing to see the so-called evidence, I'm challenging Donald Trump or any of his supporters, show the evidence where the election was stolen, and I'll give you credit. I will dedicate a whole show to singing yours and Donald Trump's praises because I was wrong. Don't hold your breath on that episode because not a single Trump voter who believes the election was stolen can provide that evidence. They just want to repeat the same stupid garbage. After 2 years, there's not been a single court who's been willing to overturn the results in a single state because any evidence has been presented. Either bring the evidence to light or shut your mouth and just drop it. It's that easy. Christy McCollum says, just another idea, other change. Others change what the Constitution means when it comes to their agenda because it's a living document that requires changes to be made. She says, I'm a little off in my comments tonight, but I have some random thoughts. No, but you know what? That makes sense because we do hear that a lot, right? The Constitution, it's outdated. If it wasn't just in 2020, if I'm not mistaken, sitting there thinking about it, we were hearing from politicians on the left who was calling to abolish the Constitution because this was an old, outdated, racist document. We need to get rid of it. That was the conversation back then. But now Donald Trump, here we are. Again, I think he's a dirtbag, but if we're going to be honest and report, then we got to be honest and report both sides are very guilty of calling for changes in the Constitution because they want something to suit their narrative. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a 90-second commercial break, and we're going to come back at you with one final thing. I'm going to give you my final thoughts on all this stuff wrapped up together. Guys, stick around. We got about another 5 minutes left in the show. Well, 6.5 after this episode. Guys, stick around.
This election, your choice couldn't be more important. Our candidate is in flattering lighting and full bright color. Their candidate is in grainy high contrast black and white, spotted through a telephoto lens from behind a bush, coming back from God only knows where. Our guy points at the horizon and holds a baby. Their guy doesn't have a baby. Their guy has a golf club. The voiceover for our guy is calm, measured, bright. Their guy gets the lower register. And sometimes we slow down. Our guy has clean headlines and the beautiful lens flare America needs. Here's a scary graph over a photo of their guy awkwardly laughing. Snap zoom. Do you want a snap zoom like that in office? Here's a photo of our guy saluting military veterans. Jump cuts, flashes, static, aggressive colors. You can't trust a guy with graphics like this. Our guy gets stock footage of sunrises and an American flag. Their guy's flag is upside down and on fire. Intercut with overdue bills, war, and a crying baby. Our guy gets doctors and astronauts and stimulus checks. Flatline, an eagle, hurricane, the Statue of Liberty. Crime scene tape, Ronald Reagan. A girl running in a wheat field to escape a dangerous sexual predator. Wielding atomic bomb. This election, the choice is yours. Their guy or our guy. Inspiring slogan.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, episode number 310, Griner's release and reaction, and Trump and the Constitution. We just covered both these over the past hour and 15 minutes. I want to wrap this up with an observation. Now, look, this may come off as a very un-American stance, and look, I don't care at this point because I have spilled my blood for this country. Now, that doesn't give me more right to say whatever I want more than anyone else, but you know what gives me equal right to say exactly what I think. I'm disappointed in this country. This country is, we are so unbelievably, unapologetically arrogant that we want to argue other states and their criminal justice system, but yet we continue to treat our own citizens like shit. You know, and the thing is, the United States leaders across the board, it doesn't matter what political party it is, But U.S. leaders, they routinely intone that the United States stands for a rules-based international order and that Washington has always tried to play its role as a benevolent global leader. The reality is decidedly less savory and far more self-centered. Washington's actual attitude since World War II is one of arrogant national narcissism. And the problem persists even in this era here, 2022. Perhaps the largest expression of that perspective was Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. She said around February 98, in an interview on NBC's Today Show, she stated that, quote, "We are America. We are the indispensable nation." She said that we stand tall. We see further than other countries into the future. What a narcissistic, what an arrogant thing to say as a Secretary of State, that we stand tall and we see further than any other country in the nation. We are the exalted ones. We're the newest country on the block, but we are the exalted ones. That sentiment existed before Albright, you know, and it has continued long after her departure from office. I mean, you can detect the same tone when President George Herbert Walker Bush in 91 State of the Union address. He said that for generations, Americans has led the struggle to preserve and to extend the blessings of liberty. And today, in a rapidly changing world, American leadership is indispensable. Americans know that leadership brings burdens and sacrifices, but we also know why the hopes of humanity turn to us. We are Americans. We have a unique responsibility to do the hard work for freedom. And when we do, freedom works. Arrogance. In his February 21 speech at the annual Munich Security Conference, Joe Biden took the stage and he said, I'll never forget it, quote, "I speak today as the President of the United States at the very start of my administration, and I'm sending a clear message to the world, America is back." And he got a resounding, oh, that's leadership, yay, right? But the unmistakable implication was that under President Donald Trump, the United States had neglected, if not forfeited, its role in the global leader. In his remarks following the June 7 summit, Biden stressed that we are a unique country. Christy McCollum says in the chat, she said Trump's temper tantrum is because he flat out got out politicianed by the election. Absolutely, yeah. He definitely got beat at a game that he wasn't prepared to argue. But you know, the thing is, the arrogance, the narcissism that's not been confined to inflated rhetoric on the part of U.S. leaders. I mean, it's frequently has been governed by the substance of U.S. policy. One example: Bill Clinton's administration addressed the issue of North Korea's nuclear weapons program in 94. In his memoirs, Bill said that, quote, "I was determined to prevent North Korea from developing a nuclear arsenal, even at the risk of war." Secretary of Defense William Perry later conceded that the administration of Bill Clinton had seriously considered conducting surgical strikes against North Korea's embryonic nuclear installations. But fortunately, former President Jimmy Carter, he convinced Clinton to let him approach North Korea to conduct talks to resolve that crisis, but he was ready to go. But it was a close call, and there's no time. Did Bill Clinton or his advisors even hint that South Korea's wishes would have any influence on Washington's decision? It was only theirs. They didn't care what was going on around. It was their decision. Seoul certainly would have had a veto over U.S. policy, but we, as American government, we acted as though we don't have it. You know, the same is true of Japan and Washington's other East Asian allies. Despite the fallout, figuratively and perhaps literal, they may experience from U.S. Airstrikes on nuclear facilities. But there's such an indifference to the wishes of allies regarding high-stakes issues, it's typified Washington's behavior over the decade. One example is how U.S. officials, they've worked to torpedo any allied security initiatives that did not leave the United States clearly in charge. You know, Washington, D.C., they have a very smothering stance on a full display during an episode in the late 90s. France and a few other European countries, they sought to create a European security and defense policy. It would have been purely European military capabilities, and they would operate solely out of NATO's framework. They wanted to control their own land outside of any influence, likely throughout the European Union. But indeed, the maverick allies, they proposed creating a rapid reaction force, right, which a QRF, which under the European control It was to implement the European Security Defense Policy. Now, when they made that announcement in the 90s, the United States leaders acted like scalded cats. You know, there's some strident objections. They bordered on hysteria. Speaking to the NATO defense ministers in Brussels in 2000, Secretary of Defense William Cohen, he warned that if the EU was to create a defense capability outside of NATO for their own uses, he argued that the alliance would become a relic of the past. You know, officials of the of George W. Bush's administration, they had a similar attitude. In 2003, Nick Burns, the U.S. ambassador to NATO, he criticized the EU's plan to create an own independent military capacity. And even Burns then branded the effort as one of the greatest dangers of the transatlantic community, and it had nothing to do with us, but we put ourselves into the conversation. John Bolton, he's another turd. He became the senior policy official at Bush's administration, later the national security advisor for Trump. He tore into the RF as a dagger pointed at NATO's heart. And it's a phrase he used again earlier in the year regarding any independent European defense initiatives. We, as a country, we are not allowing other countries to govern themselves. We have to put our hands in it. Under Bolton's influence, the Trump administration displayed intense hostility when even, was it French President Macron, right? Yeah, French President Macron, he restarted the idea of creating that EU army, but although the U.S. administrations of both Republican and Democratic, both of them, they've routinely complained that European countries, they underinvest in their defense and they fail to accept sufficient burden sharing. They shouldn't have to partake into sufficient burden sharing if they're doing it themselves. They've just been as adamant as opposing independent security initiatives by those allies. You know, U.S. officials, they want a greater burden sharing, but only within the NATO where the United States calls all the shots. In other words, the United States seek greater European efforts to help execute a U.S. foreign policy objective. Now, sometimes the attitude of U.S. officials, they don't just betray arrogant indifference to the wishes of America's supposed security partners. They convey absolute disdain. There's a contempt that's come through clearly when European allies, they sought to manage the turmoil that was unleashed by Yugoslavia's unraveling in the 90s. There was one anonymous but high-level official in George Herbert Walker Bush's administration that reportedly dismissed these ambitions with a sneering observation that the Europeans couldn't organize a three-car motorcade if their lives depended on it. That is how we talked about our allies. Two decades later, Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland, when told that some members of the EU might want to object to the aspects of Washington's campaign to undermine Ukraine's elected pro-Russia government, she responded more slightly shitty fashion. She said, fuck the EU. Alice Roosevelt Longworth, right, the daughter of President Theodore Roosevelt, she reportedly contended that her father was such an egoist that he always wanted to be the corpse at every funeral, the bride at every wedding, and the baby at every christening. The hubristic officials in charge of the United States foreign policy, they seek the similar status for the United States. They always want Washington to be in charge, even if that policy increases both the financial burdens and the military risks to the American people. They don't care. There's been a far more modest foreign policy that has been long overdue in this country. And with a president who's literally botched every major foreign policy decision of his 50 years in office, it doesn't look like we're going to be anywhere on the road to recovery for a really long time. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to, we have every intention of taking the rest of the month off. I will be showing replays unless some major news pops up and I'll make it very known that it is a live broadcast. But guys, hope that does it for me, man. I hope you guys have a safe and Merry Christmas. Spend that special time with your family. I appreciate all of you tuning in to my show because we do try to provide that middle ground analysis. But we want to educate people on what the reality is. If you're going to be mad about something, know what you're mad about and then put that attention there. Don't be so guilty to go out there and rapidly hit a click button on it because you see a meme that tells you that you need to get something done. No, take some moment, do a little bit of research, and find out if the truth is really what it is. It took me about 5 whole seconds to find the information about Paul Wieder, that he was not a retired Marine and he was a piece of shit. It was easy to find. It's there. Do the research and don't get so damn overwhelmed and so excited when you see something and you want to jump on it because you think it's the patriotic thing to do, because there's nothing like humble pie man, it tastes horrible, I promise you. Chris McConnell says that America does the same thing with their own citizens while pushing their morals on everyone from both sides. Why would we be surprised if that happens on the political gambit? Absolutely. Laura Harlow, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, enjoy the break. She says, so good to spend time with you today. I'll be texting you if anything nutty happens. Guys, I'll thank you so much. Until next time, thank you all for your service and your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, and great Americans like yourself, our country would be a very different place. We are the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. So as always, friends, don't let your dog tags dangle in the dirt. Stay on your feet and continue to fight that good fight against everything that's wrong. If you love your freedom, thank a veteran. If you love your peace, thank a police officer. If you see a first responder, give them a high five, handshake. Tell them job well done. God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States of America, friends. We're taking our Christmas break. We got work to do. Y'all take care of yourselves. Lord willing, we'll see you for the New Year's episode. Until next time, friends, my name is Philip Blackman. I'm out of here.